Welcome to the Body Meets Mind podcast, philosophies and strategies for an elevated life. I'm Tom.
And I'm Paulie. We interview world authorities and experts in health and wellness optimization, psychology and spirituality.
And we don't mind chewing the fat either, just the two of us.
If you feel like being part of a casual yarn about self-awareness and growth, pull up a chair because the coffee's still hot.
We'll see you on the inside.
Welcome to another episode of the Body Meets Mind podcast. I am Paulie. Tommy, always a pleasure to have you on the show, kind sir.
Mate, it is. It is always a pleasure. And I feel like I often go along and say something after that, but today I'm not going to.
Good on you, or just you.
Exactly.
And today we are going to discuss something which is really cool, and it's something that I definitely have suffered from many times over. In fact, I don't know many people who have it. I'm inspired by the people that do go ahead and take this action. So without any further ado, the title of this podcast really is about drawing and bridging that gap between inspiration and action. And it's something that is so important to me historically, because I am a big victim of bright and shiny object syndrome. You know, I have been in the past, and on occasion I still am. You know, I hear some incredible paths that I can take, a juncture in the road, and do I take right or do I take left? They're all so incredible, and I can immerse myself fully in the subject matter because I get so excited. And then I hear that there's this other thing that sounds just as cool. So I immerse myself in that subject matter, but ultimately when it's all said and done, a week's gone past and I've just kind of, you know, internally, mentally masturbated without actually doing anything.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I think this is a wonderful aspect and branch of the tree of what our podcast discusses. Yes, we go into philosophical ideas, sometimes esoteric ideas, but we always, I shouldn't say always, but we do venture back towards just the nitty gritty, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstrap stuff. Like how are you going to optimize your life and have the success that you want? And I think you need both. Again, this is a dichotomy. It's not a black on white, which one is better. It is you need to be inspired. You need to learn. You need to reflect. You need to pause. You need to think. You need to network. And then you need to do the thing. And you need both. And it's a constant balancing act. So I'm excited to get into it.
It so is. And it's so fun. And I get a fire within me to be able to philosophize about certain things. And this is why we started this podcast. You and I just love being able to dig deep into subject matter. But what I've found over the years for myself is if I can refine a subject down to its simplest form, that is the key. That is the key to the other side for action. That is the key to the other side for digestion. And that is the key to the other side to be able to communicate what it is that you're trying to say.
Yes. Yes. It's, you know, and philosophy is, it's beautiful and it's important. And self-reflection, you know, is important. But we also need to have the awareness as to when it started to spill over into just rumination, you know, and there has to be a point at which, you know, and this comes up in the clinical world all the time, you know, and in the therapy space. In the very beginning, the doing is asking for help. But if all we're doing is constantly going back into your past, and ruminating, we're not getting anywhere. And so what I try to tell people is that understanding your conditioning and your projections and your childhood and so forth is good for context so that we can refine and tailor a life that excites you. In other words, something you're headed towards. And philosophy is very, you know, when you were talking before, dude, there's a meme of the statue of David, you know, thinking, or no, kind of obviously can't be the statue of David. Just a great philosopher, for example, like thinking and going, oh, what is the meaning of life? And next to it, there's just footprints of another statue that just went out there and lived it. So you kind of need both, you know.
You do. I mean, I love what you said there about, you know, drawing on your past for context, drawing on where you've come from. But it's so easy to, like you said, to ruminate and philosophize and continue to, I suppose, embellish a story that you've had in the past over and over and over again. And I feel if you continue to do that for a long period of time, that just amplifies this non-action, because yes, you can get stuck in this very exciting narrative that is, you know, the philosophical, dramatization of a topic, but ultimately it's avoiding what we're trying to achieve, which if it's not pure philosophy and just rumination, then it's action, right? It's like, right, what are you going to do about it?
Right.
You know, let's use an example, Tommy. Give me an example perhaps of what's come across your field of work, or you know, what's happened in your own personal life where you could take path A or path B.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, firstly, I want to empathize with people because, you know, I probably come across as very assertive here, because I've made these mistakes for years, you know, so I ruminated and I went a little bit insane, you know, especially in 2018, I went heavily into my past to try to understand myself without having any kind of tether to earth. Mm. So I felt like I was just drowning in an ocean, and chasing my own tail after a while. And so what I always try to tell people is that, you know, hey, analyze your dreams. Let's talk about your dreams. Let's talk about your past. Do some sort of solitude practice. You know, people out there are doing all different sorts of psychedelic journeys and stuff as well now, you know, as that becomes not only increasingly popular, but decriminalized, you know, and Australia will follow very soon. But do it for the purposes of living a more fulfilled life. Because if you don't, if you just go out there and swim without a life jacket, you will drown. And a perfect example is, I remember speaking with a client who was trying to understand her past to heal from a kind of pain, pleasure, toxic relationship, you know, and we would do some work, because I never want to tell people this is how to do therapy. I want people to feel like it's their own exploration.
Well,
and that I'm just there if they want me there. it started getting to the point where certain assumptions were conflicting with others. In other words, well, mum's, and I'll just give you a very tangible example. Mum said this to me at 11. So maybe this is why I'm A, B, and C. But then at the same time, dad said this to me when I was 12. So that conflicts with that. And what you were talking about before is very, very true, in that whatever the story is, as long as that is empowering, then we're off to the races.
Yeah.
And going back into the past for context is so that we can edit the story to make one that no longer limits you and turn it into something that empowers you. So if we go back and we find a couple of experiences that we believe may or may not have led to a limiting belief.
Yep.
None of this is scientific. The science is good in psychology because it looks at correlations and associations. So we know that, for example, children, there's a really great study which looks at adverse childhood experiences. And the more childhood trauma you've experienced, the more likely it is that you're going to have a wealth of issues in adulthood. So there is science behind this. But in terms of at the individual level, we go, well, mum said this to you in year 12, therefore your issues with money are 100% associated. We can't ever say that. What we need is to extract the story that was limiting and then change that story. So it is a lot of bit of play. And that's why I say at the end, it's like, if you have a kind of somatic feeling that resonated with you, that's enough. And we can work with that.
Yeah. It's kind of like an anchor, isn't it? Mm. It's like a starting point for you to be able to reference. And then you're like, okay, so I can identify that this could have contributed to my mindset with something or other.
Yep.
Now that I have that reference point, let's create another story because I mean, ultimately life is just comprised of shit we make up, right? Yeah. So we might as well make up stuff that is going to be advantageous for our future.
Totally.
And which, you know, getting back to the topic at hand, which then kind of, leads us to this anchor point. How can we change something that our mum told us when we were kids to something that we can actually take advantage of and actually take action with today? Let's use people's association with money.
Sure.
I feel like I grew up in a household where my mother always felt like we were in a struggling, financial situation. I mean, being an adult now, looking back, I don't actually feel that is the case, but it's irrelevant.
Yes.
What the rational observation of it is now. It's the emotional imprint that was placed. So it's like, how does that spawn, or how does that plant seeds in my mind? And then how do they spawn as an adult, and how do they manifest when it comes to day-to-day life? Looking for sales everywhere, thinking that you are going to struggle in every aspect of your financial journey. So what do you do about being able to change that story so you can actually have a greater relationship with your finances?
Yeah, well, I mean, you hit the nail on the head perfectly, man. I think that's where you can start to get some awareness as to how the past experience did impact your life. It's like, do we know it was this thing, or this thing? It's like, well, could be all of them, but if it was, to use your experience, it's like, I have a real issue with money. Let's say, for example, so someone listening got a real issue with money. I was raised in a family where, it was hard to make money. The belief that was set in was it was hard to make money. Now, sometimes those beliefs are true. If you grew up in the Great Depression, as our grandparents did, that was a belief predicated on the truth, because it was really hard. People were eating lard sandwiches and everything,
Totally.
But if it's still holding you back, irrespective as to whether it was the objective truth or not, we're now looking at in the modern world, and you'll be able to tell where the limiting belief came from, or the intensity of the limiting belief, to the degree that you acting in an alternative way is creating a prevalence of resistance. So if your mum said to you, or your dad said, children are meant to be seen and not heard, and you grew up and you say to Paulie or Tom or whoever, I really struggle with confidence. And we're like, okay, what the hell's that? What do you mean? It's such a broad thing to say. It's like, is it confidence playing footy? It's like, well, they can play footy. And then they get to the point where they want to tell us how they really feel. And there's a giant blockage there. Well, there's a very strong correlation between when your dad said children are meant to be seen, not heard, and you being unable to use your voice. But the way to change this after you received the context is baby steps. I think at the end of the day, we don't have to complicate things that we know to be true intuitively. And every journey to the top of the mountain starts with a single step. That's just the truth. And ask for help as much as you need along the way, but that's how you're going to get to the top.
Yeah, and I think we've discussed this, and we've used this strategy in other discussions, but it resonates more than ever if you're trying to change a deep-seated childhood belief that has kind of served you, because right. You've survived and you've created an identity around this, and you've probably really, really thrived might not be the right word. But what you have done is you've succeeded in life to bring you to that. You're right, and it's validating because you're here, you're alive, you have relationships, but ultimately you want to go in a different direction. So, it's like, in order to almost like create a different path, you need to uncover the murkiness of what's been going on in the past and just create slight little, in Buddhism, they talk about just, uncovering the stains in your thinking and just slowly removing some of the blemishes before you can create new thoughts.
Mm.
And this I feel can kind of, you know, translate to this, but it needs to be bite-sized components because you'll just get completely intimidated by the entire process. If you say, right, go out and buy a Jaguar. You know,
that's a live like, Jaguar.
A live Jaguar and drive it.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Glue a steering wheel. Exactly, exactly.
RSPCA, we are joking.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, we're not. There's a couple of organizations that I think we have a hard time with that one.
This episode is sponsored by.
Yeah, but the RSPCA, the Melbourne Zoo. But I think you're exactly right, mate. And I think this is where it comes back to balancing both, you know, and we can talk about the polarity of inspiration and action in many different ways. It can be a reflection and then an action, whatever it is, you know. But if you just act, you know, if you just do, you're essentially blind and you're just going to fall in the same pitfall all the time, you know. If you never begin, you might have the greatest understanding of how to go about something, but you'll never get it done, you know, and you probably won't either because most of us learn by doing. You know, Tim Grover, who was the coach for mindset coach for Kobe Bryant and Michael Jordan, I heard him speak on a
podcast. We'll get him on the show?
We should get him on the show. Yeah, we should get him on the show. He's brilliant. He said he was talking about what you do after failure because everyone knows how you need, you know, we've all heard this before. You need to go for failure and, you know, be okay with it and all that sort of thing. And he says most people talk about how you have to get up when you're down. You know, that's Rocky's favorite thing. And he says, I try to tell people to stay down. It's a brilliant quote. He says, I try to tell people to stay down there in the shit, you know, and really figure out why you are there so that it doesn't happen again. Because if you just get up again, you'll make the same mistake. But if you stay down there and you really feel the pain of insecurity and low self-esteem and rejection and it happens 1,000 times in 90 minutes on the jiu-jitsu mats. That's why I really like it.
You're
like, oh God, you know. It forces you to really think about what happened. I'll tell you a story. There's a specific choke in jiu-jitsu called the Das choke, where you kind of come in through the back. You can come in through the back, but there's two chokes that kind of look the same. One's an anaconda choke, one's a Das choke. Anyway, I was having some real difficulties defending the Das choke with my former coach who only got his black belt. Shout out to Kale, very, very dear friend of mine. Love you, Kale.
Good day, Kale.
Good day, Kale. And I said, look, what am I doing wrong? And he's just like, look, this is what you're doing, you know, A, B, and C. And he submitted me 8 times with the Das choke in about 25 minutes and he cranked it and it was really painful. But every time, and he made sure to emphasize the squeeze every time I did the same thing wrong to really make sure, but I haven't done that since. I make sure not to bring my arm in more. You know, like I was doing a white belt level, but it was painful, but I don't think I've been Das choked since, you know, which makes it probably just haven't rolled with high belts, probably should, but it was a really good lesson.
Or, you know, there were 8 exclamation marks after that Das choke and you pay attention to exclamation marks. Yeah,
exactly. You really do. Pain really hurts and it really makes us pay attention if we're willing to pay attention to it, as opposed to just unconsciously running away from it.
Yeah. That. And speaking of like unconscious or subconscious behavior, that's the stuff that kind of really resonates when it comes to action shaking. Because if you can't identify what your subconscious thoughts, beliefs, and emotions are, then it's really difficult for you to be able to change the stories that you've created in the past in order to take that action, right?
Totally, man. Totally. You mentioned this idea about we'll paint a picture for someone here. So let's just say someone's been raised. We'll use your story, raised with that belief that money is scarce, it's hard to come across. If you found a way to access it, hold on to that. You know,
yep.
Very easily lends itself to don't change jobs sort of thing. You find yourself going to garage sales and so forth. the way this kind of conscious, subconscious belief paradigm plays out is subconsciously money is scarce and that's guiding your willingness to go to a garage sale. And you might say to someone, oh, it just makes sense. You know, if you can get a cheap deal, you can get a cheap deal. What happens, Paulie, then, and what has happened in your own life, I suppose, as you start to pull that subconscious belief with the understanding of the context around it out into the open and go, oh, this is why I'm going to garage sales. Paint the picture.
Sorry, can you, was that a question at the end of that?
It was, but then I started to think I may have answered it myself there.
Okay. Because it resonated very heavily with me. And then it's like, what are the actions that you take in order to override, you know, the op shops and the garage sales?
Right.
Like actively go out and buy something full price. Actively go out and give money to people, you know. There are so many things that you can create an abundant mindset, not just let's depart from money for a moment. Yeah. And let's look at an abundant mindset when it comes to anything you're trying to achieve, right?
Yes, totally, totally. And you're exactly right. Like the actual thing in itself is amoral. It's like garage sales are good, you know, of course. Well, they're not even bad or good. But
yeah.
Why you go to one? Is it because money's really scarce and I need things to be as cheap as possible? Or is it because I might find a really good deal on something to give to someone I like? You know, you're totally spot on.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, it's super interesting. I feel like we've touched on some pretty interesting points as to how we can kind of draw that gap between education or inspiration.
Yes.
And action. Are there any last thoughts that you want to add to that, Tommy, before we wind things up?
I suppose I just really love to highlight the significance of the stories we tell ourselves. I was listening to a behavioral economist talk about lying and the reasons why people lie. And he says that normally, so if you know, there's this test where you can get away with lying. So, you know, you roll a dice and you're attached to a polygraph test or a lie detection test, and it lands on the number, on any particular number. And then the scientist or the experiment will say, oh, was that your number? You know, and people will say either yes or no. And people that are obviously more willing to lie will lie, and people won't. And a polygraph measures your physiology. So it's not 100% accurate. But if you start to get an increased heart rate, sweaty palms, the little, we've all seen that before in TV shows and movies. So we can predict lying in that way. And he says we can predict lying when there's a tension between wanting to get away with something, but knowing what the right thing to do is. Then what's really interesting is he says, and the whole thing was the more you get right, the more money you make or something like that. Okay. So people obviously really want to make that money, but they lie because there's that tension between what they want and what they know to be right. And then what they do is they flip the switch and they say, so the more times you get this right, the more money will go to a charity that you really believe in. So now that tension is not necessarily not there, but it is messy because it's like, well, I know I shouldn't lie, but also lying is going to make these people really satisfied financially. I can help them. And it's virtually impossible to predict who's lying. So what's really interesting about that is that if we subscribe to an empowering story about how we can help other people, or we can promote a cause or find purpose or meaning in something, our willingness to lie, deceive, sure, that's going to go up. But what I'm getting at is the tension to overcome personal challenges, perhaps it's laziness and mental masturbation and so forth, is going to be far, far easier because we're so much more willing to do something for something that we believe in. Mm. So the story that we tell ourselves, A, can be manipulated, B, can be way more empowering depending on how you say it.
Mm.
I mean, you know, for you and I, man, like think about why we're doing this podcast and all the conversations we've had. We love it, you know.
We do. And it's perfectly, I was going to draw on that as an example. It's like, we are fueled by serious purpose and meaning for this podcast. And I feel like we constantly remind each other of that every time we get on to speak. And I feel like that's going to really, really resonate with people listening, because we're not doing this for our own, you know, not that it's a bad thing, but we're not doing this for financial gain. We're not doing all, because all of these types of things could come.
Yep.
They could be delayed. They could be instantaneous. They could be a great myriad of many things. But ultimately, if the core belief as to why this is driving us remains at the forefront of our minds, and why we started this podcast, we'll keep doing this, and we'll keep doing it over and over and over again, because we love it. And we feel like we're providing value, not just to you guys, but to each other and to ourselves.
Yeah. There's nothing better than getting caffeinated and having a chat. You know, it's good. I'd exchange all the camels in the world for it. I'll give you 4 camels.
For your eldest daughter.
Yeah, for your eldest daughter. Funnily enough, my partner Siobhan was nearly traded for a camel when she went to Egypt. How's that?
That's pretty good, man.
Yeah, we'll have to get her on the show. I was like, God, I probably would have said yes to 2.
Seriously?
Yeah, 2 good camels, you know,
yeah.
Like top of the stock.
Dude, like, have you tried camel milk?
Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, good humps, you know. I mean, it works. Get around.
All right, Bully. We'll wind up, but thank you, Tommy. Thank you, everyone, for a good yarn. If you guys are struggling with taking action with anything, I encourage you guys to write in the comments below what it is that you're struggling with and where you feel that the barrier is coming up. And we'd love to kind of start talking about that and have a bit of a yarn about it as well. Be great.
Definitely. All right, guys. We'll speak to you soon.
Take care.